Welcome to Season 8, Episode 24 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we get a little vanilla and we decide to talk generic systems. And that's it. Again, welcome to Season 8, Episode 24 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining us is Chris and Paul. Welcome, gentlemen.
Greetings.
Greetings.
End of the year. We were just kind of talking about this before we started recording, and it's hard to believe it's actually the end of the year now, at least for our recording purposes, and, well, for the calendar purposes, unless you follow the Chinese calendar, right? Because I think it starts in a different part of the...
Yeah, it starts like in February, I think, February, March.
Something like that, because I remember me and the girlfriend went to this weird Chinese light festival thing. And, you know, they had like the years rolled out. And I'm like, and you know, like the year that I was born, it was, if you go by just the English year, puts me as a dog in the astrological, not dog, but a pig. You know, it was Year of the Pig. No. But if you actually put in the actual date and actually convert it to the Chinese calendar, I'm in the Year of the Dog.
my wife and I, who are, our birth dates are separated by 9 months, are both water rats.
Nice. There you go. Yeah, that stuff's silly. Well, I shouldn't call it silly. Some people believe it. So what? Who am I to say? Mm-hmm. Heck, my mother, I used to read tarot cards.
Mm.
That tarot deck that she had scared the bejesus out of me growing up. It really did. It was like one of those sacrilegious things you didn't want to touch.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Like the Ouija board and stuff like that. Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, it's a tarot deck. Who cares a shit?
Actually, it gets worse than that. But back when I was in college, me and my buddies used to play 21 with the damn things.
Play 21s with a...
Well, there's four sets of suits. They're based on stars. And then we just use the wild cards to make up our own rules as we went along.
Yeah, that's...
Nice.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So, that'd be fun.
I just whacked the microphone with my phone. That's good. So, if you heard a little thud, that was my microphone being, well, just me. So let's hit some news, because there's really no news. It's all Kickstarters. I think that's where we kind of get to this time of year, because even the Kickstarters, there's not as many as there usually is. So there's even one or two that I've kind of thrown in here that aren't quite, they're RPG related, but barely. So first up, sci-fi RPG modular rooms, maps, and art pack. I love maps, and I love the little... You know, if you're going to use miniatures, I love the little map packs that people have. So, these kind of look cool.
Yeah, not disagreeing there. Has a real space. It feels almost like Wing Commander is the best way to describe it. Kind of that feeling of the old school hangars.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I agree. That kind of looks... It looks kind of cool. It's from Canada.
Sweet.
Well, it's all digital though too.
Yeah,
so there's no shipping,
which is great. So I'm just saying it does the conversion from Canadian to U.S. dollars for me.
Yep,
doesn't it? Yes, there we go. Because it's listed in Canaan. So not that expensive, really. You know, I think the
it's about $25 for all the maps. Yeah. It looks like,
and all the stretch goals if he reaches the stretch goals, which is, you know, that's really not too bad. And you know, I mean, this looks good for what it is. I mean, for sci-fi, this art style works for me. For some other things, it probably wouldn't.
Yeah, but it's got that old 70s feel. You know, like, it feels like you'd be using this if you wanted to play a live-action version of Outland or something. And, you know, have me Sean Connery running through the decks.
I actually, you know, it's funny. I was bored one day, and I decided, you know, I haven't seen that in a while. Oh, I'll just purchase that off Amazon. Screw renting it. And that's at a certain level, it doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, in terms of the physics, but it's a fun thing to watch.
That's one of my favorites from that era of sci-fi movies, that and Logan's Run and
Oh, Yeah.
Damnation Alley, that kind of stuff. Those are fantastic, fun movies.
Yeah, especially, you know, Logan's Run. That's one of my personal favorites from that time period. And it's weird. It's kind of weird to watch now, in a way. You know, just from the tech level. But it's just like, well, you know.
Well, I get the same vibe whenever I watch Blake 7. I love it, but they're using parts that they probably picked up at a garage sale while hanging around a mine.
Oh, you know, hell, Doctor Who was the same way, the early Doctor Who.
Yep.
You know, I remember watching one episode of Doctor Who, a bad guy had a ray gun, and you're like, that is a toy M16 that they cut parts off of. You know, a little plastic toy. And you're just like, that's just silly.
I don't know. If I ever end up making a movie of my own, I have a feeling I'll be hitting the discount bin at freaking Goodwill.
You know, that a lot of the low-budget stuff is cool. It's kind of cool. Or, you know, what I like to call the B science fiction, B fantasy, B movies, period.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, the direct-to-video stuff. Sometimes I actually find that some of that stuff, story-wise, is a hell of a lot more enjoyable than what you get on mainstream. It's like, either they have something to prove, or it's just like, it's just campy enough. You're like, I'm going to go with it. I'm good. So, let's get up to the next one. This one is barely RPG related. It's a Traveler customizable card game that they're trying to put out, which I'm not sure. They're asking quite a bit of money.
I don't know if they're going to make it.
They might. It looks cool. I think it would be cooler if it was something that you could also use by playing Traveler. You know, like if the decks had a secondary purpose than they do. I mean, the artwork, I guess. But
yeah,
but that only the ship cards. I mean, I've looking at their cards. I mean, everything else just looks.
Well, it looks like this is their first project too, so it's kind of a tough one.
You know, I don't like the fact that, you know, I get it. They say customizable. It's like, okay, so each player has to have their own little deck. It's like, okay, I don't want Pokemon for Traveler.
Yep.
Or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's quite that way.
It does require everybody to have their own separate deck.
Right.
And, but yeah, it's not really specific on the rest of it though.
Yeah. Well, each there's a ship deck, and right now they only have two ships, the Scout and the Free Trader.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, so each one has their own advantages and disadvantages. Okay. And I'm guessing that the two-player starter set has one of each. Yeah, it does.
Yep.
A rule book and some counters. And then, you know, then if they hit their, I guess, is that just their add-ons or their stretch? That's their add-ons.
They have only two stretch goals, which are just an extra card and card sleeves.
Yeah, which is I would think more ships, but that's just me.
You know what would have been a way cooler concept though? If they'd have done a card game based on character generation in Traveler.
You know, that would have been interesting. I agree. I think that would have been more interesting.
That actually would have been kind of cool.
You know, it's like,
and useful again too.
Yeah, because you can play the game, or you can play it to build your character for the next game.
Wow, I don't know how complex that would be. You know,
most of the rules are already set up for you. You just roll, hey, look, you're part of the Merchant Marine, and you just got captured.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying, if you to try to make it a card game, it would be an interesting conversion to do that. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. But still, it's, you know, they put a lot of heart, they put a lot of effort in the sucker.
Yeah.
Well, it's non-collectible, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, well, like you said, collectible card games are a pain in the ass.
No, I mean, not that I would dismiss the fact that Magic the Gathering practically saved D&D. I mean, we would be remiss in not mentioning that. I mean, from a financial standpoint.
That is true.
You know, I mean, you know, as much as I diss, you know, those collectible card games, they did serve a purpose for in terms of monetary flow. Without that, Wizards of the Coast would have not made any money, which meant that they would have not been able to buy, you know, the D&D properties. Intellectual properties, which means that, you know, at a certain point they wouldn't have been able to produce anything. But it's funny, you know, Wizards of the Coast did have other games before D&D.
Heck, I remember a certain lawsuit where they basically got in trouble. Palladium basically tried to lean on them because they tried to infringe on their own copyright property. how things have changed.
Yeah. But I actually own one of the two games that they released. as their own back in the day.
Well, they released a version of Ars Magica.
Oh, did they? That I did not know. So there's
yeah, three. I want to say.
Well, there was Talislanta. There was Talislanta, yep. Which originally was Bard Games, and then it became Wizards of the Coast. And then there was something really weird called. The hell was it called? Ooh, it was a weird. It was out to a weird sort of quasi. It was an RPG kind of, but it had a whole bunch of cards in it, and the cards in the box were like completely random.
Yeah, I remember. I know which one you're talking about. I don't know that I ever owned a copy though.
Fuck! It was. It's not EverQuest, but it's not. I because that's a video game. But
Everways.
Okay, there you go.
Right on.
I knew it had Ever in it, but it's like, no, I know it wasn't EverQuest, but Everways, yeah. And someone I know actually picked that up at like a used bookstore, and he loved all the cards, but he's like, I don't want to do anything else with this game, so. Only goes to show you. All right, so, you know, this is interesting. I don't know how, it would be interesting to maybe play once, but I don't know if I'd want to spend the money, because what are they looking at for?
$75 for a two-player starter set.
No, $40.
Is it $40?
$75 for the collector's edition.
You're right. $40. Okay, $70 for the starter edition. Okay.
It's not unreasonable, but...
True.
I'd have to see a demonstration before I pass judgment.
Exactly.
It might be the best thing since sliced bread, but the aesthetics look great, but kind of limited.
That's kind of what I was thinking, so... All right, why don't we get on to the next Kickstarter so we can actually get to our topics. Let's get through these suckers. We have, again, another set of ready-to-play adventures for D&D 5th Edition. And it says Pathfinder and other RPGs, so I'm sure it's just for 5th Edition. People are just going to say, oh, you can convert them. The Valen of Kildar?
Yeah, works for me. Kildar it is.
Yeah. Does look like the map was probably done... This little map they do, it kind of looks like it's probably done in some version of Campaign Cartographer. At least the trees look like that.
Honestly, I gotta say, I kind of like the look of the map. It looks like a really fun little setting.
Yeah.
With the art, I think, while a little cartoony,
I think that's on purpose. Seems like it
might be approachable for maybe some younger players, and might be good for beginning GMs.
Yeah.
Feels like an 80s cartoon, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I have nothing wrong with that. So there's 20 quests, as they say. And the funny thing is that the digital copy is $8 Canadian, $6 US.
Sweet.
Really? And you're just like, that is for what?
And they've already made their goal, too.
Yeah, that's agreed.
So that's, I mean, he was only asking almost nothing to produce it. And it's like, yeah, you know, this is one of those ones that it's like, you know, $6 US, you know, I go out to lunch and I spend $6. So why not? This is like one of those why not ones. It's like, it's especially being a digital, it's like, well, I'll just store the digital stuff somewhere. And if it works for me, if it doesn't, you know, maybe I can use at least something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 20 dungeons, 15 buildings. You know,
I'm hard to see what their illustrated bestiary looks like. It's based on a similar theme, like the maps are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They only have an image of. They have like this. Oh, I guess the watchtower. They have like this pen and ink drawing of the watchtower, sort of. It looks like it's probably not pen and ink, but it looks like pen and ink, kind of, sort of.
Well, I think that's the intention they're going for.
Yeah.
It's so, definitely worth a shot.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is one of those things where it's like, yeah, this stuff like this, it's like, again, $6, an electronic format, it doesn't take a space on the shelf, and, you know, worst comes to worst, you spent $6 for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those...
adventure.
And I know if someone's going to say, that's a horrible thing to say about a product. Well, you know, it looks interesting, and the cost is there that, you know, that's a good justification to give it a whirl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next up, we have Digital Coin Forge. And for some reason, some people like these digital coin things. I guess if you want to print them out, use them, you know, as like Benny tokens or something in one of those games or whatever.
Now, well, it's good for what it is, which is if you want to build your own custom coins, you can pop it through, set it up, and go from there. And he's already made his pledge, so it's just a matter of what you want to do with it at this point.
Well, it looks like he has a whole bunch of random... if you want to just spend not a lot of money, he'll send you like some random pre-made digital coins. And then at about $19 is when you actually get the digital coin forge with the PDF instructions. And there's like 75 coin... There's a whole bunch of
templates,
stuff.
Templates.
So,
My big question would be if you can use this stuff for, say, commercial use. Let's say you build your own world. Would you be able to use these coins and say, these are the coins and what they represent in my world, etc.?
That would be a good question. Let's see. Does he have something enough to...
So, you know, as a player item, it might be limited, but if you choose to use it for, lack of a better term, stock art, I could see a lot of potential.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you can... One of the problems, I'm not totally familiar with the conversion over from Australian dollars to either U.S. or Canadian dollars.
Yeah. No, I mean, in mine, they're saying about $8 Australian is about $6 U.S.
Okay, that gives you an idea of a gauge there.
So it's like for every 4 Australian, it's $3 U.S., give or take.
Okay, that gives you an idea of the baseline.
So, well, it's not that expensive. He reached his goal.
Yep.
So, with only 13 backers.
Wow.
Well, he was only asking for something like, in terms of U.S. money, like $180, $186. So, that's not that bad. I love these small ones like this because it's like, well, they're just trying to do it to, hey, I need at least this money to actually produce this stuff and everything else is gravy.
Yeah, you can definitely tell this is a labor of love for a very particular specialized niche goal.
Well, and that's where I think this is. You know, this is a very, one of those small, you know, areas. All right, so anything else? What, are you going to say something?
Oh, no, I'm good.
All right. Yeah, let's move on. We have, I thought I had another, no, I guess, okay. So we have Raiders of the North 2-0. Some miniatures, and I always love miniatures. They've reached their goal. You know, I think they look good, and they're all these guys on horseback. Of course, the downside is what happens when they dismount?
They get bow-legged.
Well, I think they're all one piece.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, this is the common complaint that I have with these. You know, this is the common thing with miniatures. It's like, you know, what do you do? Do you have two miniatures, one when they're mounted, one when they're dismounted? Or, you know, do you just have separate, if you do minis, do you just have separate horses and you have the two figures together? Or you just say, this is my character? You know, it's complicated, as they say. But at least these, because these look like just the 3D renderings of models. They're not actual. I don't think, because they don't. These images don't look like they're the actual prints or whatever.
No, it doesn't look like they have any yet. Yeah. So
they're. I guess they're high quality resin models. So it's some sort of cut. You know, I don't know if it's injection mold or whatever. But they did reach their goal, and I do agree that they do look good. So
like very Arabian Nights feel to them.
Some of them. Oh.
Yeah, I could see that. And there are only 3 of them, I believe, total.
One, two. Yeah, there's 3. There's 3 models. And what are they asking for?
$27 bucks if you want all 3 of them.
And sadly, that's about right these days for miniatures that are, you know, especially something that size.
I'm kind of wondering about that first model, though. If you look at the front hooves of the horse, they are at a different level than the back hooves. Seems like they're going to need to prop that up or something. I don't know. So, anyway.
Well, you know, that's what... I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's again, this is the model. This is not what it's going to look like. I remember seeing some models. Well, luckily, they're going to be resin, so they're not going to be as heavy as a metal mini.
Oh, I suppose, yeah. It's possible they could just be on the one leg, yeah.
Yeah, so... That's just one of those things. But I remember when I've actually seen miniature models where you know, things are leaping, they'll have weird little flourishes. Like, I remember I had a tiger, and it's like there was this piece of tall grass that comes up around, you know, where their shoulder is, and it's like, because that's so they can actually brace the figure with arms outstretched, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I know why that's there. But it doesn't, you know, it actually still looks good, so we'll see. All right, so we have a Fate game, actually, up. The Road to Heaven, a Bronze Age Fate fantasy RPG. I don't know, either one of you guys a big fan of Fate?
I've played a couple of games, but I don't know. I could take it or leave it, to be honest with you.
I haven't had a whole lot of luck with it. I suspect I probably just need to find someone who really knows how to run it to really get to grips with it.
I tend to agree with that. I think, you know, I've played like one, maybe two games of Fate at a convention, and I think it's not my style. The way I think Fate should be played, I don't think it's my style. You know, I tend to be a little more number crunchy. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's pretty loose in some respects. It's kind of a weird juxtaposition between that. There's a little bit of crunch in there, and there's a lot of looseness, and it's kind of hard to balance.
Yeah.
But I love this whole Bronze Age thing here, because it's like, you know, I love, you know, as a person who likes archaeology and ancient history, I like this whole Bronze Age concept, and I like the fact that the whole, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, the farmer knows a little bit of magic that would be related to farming or whatever. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
You're right. This does have a bit of a Glorthanda feel to it just by reading about it.
Has a bit of which?
Glorthanda. RuneQuest.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the Bronze Age. Everybody has a little bit of magic here and there, but it's not the main focus.
Oh, man. I love playing RuneQuest, but it was a bitch to run.
I'm looking forward to seeing the 13th Age version of the game, and we'll see how well that plays. Yeah. I backed the Kickstarter, so I'll keep you posted on that one.
All right. So they're they still got 26 days to go. They're only about a little under half their way through. And right now, I guess the digital copy is about $10 US.
Yeah, they already got their big pledges already been used up. Both the priest and the sorcerer are already done.
Yeah.
So, basically you'd have to go in the hero slot level. So, it's another one of those ones where they basically are ultra effective purposes early bird specials.
Yeah, that kind of annoys me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get what they're trying to do, but then it's like, well, your slots will screw in some other people, so I don't know.
Because that jumps from $10 to $60. Wow.
Yeah, that really adds a bit of a disconnect.
And there's only one of the $60 ones left, and then the only thing you can do is digital?
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to make their money for the project unless they have something wacky they were not aware of.
It seems like they kind of hampered themselves by removing any kind of a generically accessible level for print.
I don't think anything's print.
It's not print at all?
None of them are print.
No. Looking at that there, everything's saying digital rewards.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. $60 for a digital book.
Well, but you see, if you read them, really the only thing you're getting when you spend more money is, you know, at one level, the four backers at the priest level is, oh, you get to work with me to write one of the settings gods. Really? Yeah.
Okay, that I have a problem with, because honestly, you should have done your work before you brought it to market.
I kind of have a problem with this only from the standpoint of, you know, that's like, hey, you know what? Pay me and I'll let you help me. That's what that is. Those pledges went and people wanted to do that, but it's just like, it does make me wonder what the end product will eventually look like when that happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, another thing you'll notice is that they talk about they are having a modified version of Fate, which is something we can get into later on about generic systems. But so this isn't straight Fate. This is their own modified version of Fate.
Yeah.
Fate with a twist.
Yep.
All right. next up, we have more adventures. You know, actually, almost all these Kickstarters are either like Canada or UK or Europe, I've noticed.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
It's the time of year. No one in the U.S. wants to do anything. It's like, it's December, screw it. But we have Drag and Drop Adventures 5th Edition. So more adventures. Again, not a very high stretch goal. I mean, not a very high stretch goal. Not a very high goal, and they got what they're doing. Because let's see, what are they asking for? All four adventures, about $15 U.S. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and level 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then I guess they have some stretch goals that they got funded.
Yep.
Which include, you know, some full-color maps, some illustrated villains. And I guess their level 5 adventure got funded too, so that's in the mix too. So there's, so it's actually like 5 adventures, I guess, now.
That's good.
You know, again, you know, if I played 5th edition, I'd probably pick these up just to see what I might... Again, you know, a lot of the adventures, I don't know if I'd run them as is sometimes. But it's like, hey, maybe there's a good idea that I can mine for. And at a cheap price, it's worth it.
That's kind of my problem with some of these, is like the Valley of Kildar. I was thinking, that seems kind of neat, but I don't have any intention of running 5e. And so it's like, do I really want to convert this stuff, or should I just get something that's specifically for the system that I'm running?
Exactly. I get that too. So next up, we have 1-inch grid dungeon tiles for tabletop RPGs, and they say for about $13 US, but that's not quite true. It's about $20 for one set. If you order more, I guess they, as they go through, the cost per set is lower. Like if you order two sets, it's $19 a set. Three, it's $18 per set, and so forth and so on. So if you actually order six, it's like $15 a set. And all the way at eight sets, it's $13 per set. And you're like, really? Okay, I get that. Every time you order a set, it's $1 cheaper per set. You know, and it does add up, I guess. But I would have just said just a straight $20, be done with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I do like their idea. You know, they have some basic, you know, tile sets. And I've always loved tile sets. I have a set of the old Hex, you know, not the old Hex, but Equal Ideas, random dungeon geomorphs. I have those old cards. I have the dice. Mm-hmm. Of course, his cards were smaller. Right? No, ours were the... No, I do have the bigger ones, right? Somewhere? Yeah, they're somewhere here.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the Pathfinder tile sets where you basically get a theme and you basically just slap them down.
Yeah.
And then when they enter a new area, you just flip them over. It's kind of the same idea here, although this thing might be a little harder to do so.
I mean, and it's actually pretty straightforward. I mean, it's just like, you know, blank tiles, some hallways, some corners. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, everything's at 90 degrees. I guess there's a secondary dungeon tile set that has some different ones. And there's set three. So right now there's three sets.
Yeah. Well, I always got a soft spot for the old grid-style dungeons because, you know, makes you feel like Ultima or some of those games where it generates a dungeon by formula. You know, you go down there like the Mines of Moria, yeah, which is, you know, those old games for your computer. So, I like it. It looks cute.
Never know. I mean, I think these are useful in certain circumstances, especially if you're just trying to, like, teach people how to dungeon crawl, because sometimes you do.
Oh, yes.
So... All right, so next up we have two final Kickstarters. The first one is Hyperlane, cinematic sci-fi for D&D 5th edition. I just like the name, Hyperlanes.
Looks cute, that's for sure. It's a humming engine of science fiction action, and it's what you need to adapt your favorite star-spanning adventure sitting in your own living room cockpit. We take inspiration from such classics as Star Wars, Firefly, Cowboy Bebop, and Guardians of the Galaxy. We're pretty sure this action sci-fi something is what you've been looking for. I ain't gonna lie to you. I am curious. You can definitely tell it has a lot of personality. They did a great job with the art, considering what they're trying to do. And it's already set up with a good chunk of the backer levels. Did it make funding yet? No, it's not even halfway yet, but it's gonna.
No, it has 19 days.
Yeah, it's doable, but they're going to sure have to push on the stuff.
And it's right now, for all the digital stuff, it's about $20.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Yep.
And then at like $50, it's PDF copies of everything, and then I guess the hardcover of the core rulebook.
Yeah, which is always useful.
Yeah. That's probably where I would go, because, you know, they have like this, like one of them is a player's guide. And it's like, you know, okay. I don't, because the only other level they have, let's see. Loyalty, but so the, with the hardcover, it's $50. So.
Yeah, let's say that's
$20. And it's $100 to get, you know, the PDFs, the hardcover, the core rulebook, the soft cover, the player's guide, and then the Gambit deck, which I don't know what that is.
They mentioned it in there, but
I'm sure it's some game related thing.
I do think it's interesting that they note that their book is not for your hard sci-fi game. It's very much a more leaning towards space opera, space fantasy, space action type of game, as opposed to the right. You know, Werner Vinge style game.
Right. Well, you know, it's like, let's face it, I mean, Star Wars, for example, is basically science fantasy.
Right.
Yep. It's not science fiction, it's science fantasy.
Yeah, it's basically a fantasy game, but instead of wizards, you have Jedi. It's
what the hell was that damn... Yeah. There was a person doing comics, or quasi-comics, where they were making... That was like their thing. I forget which one that is. I mean, I know you guys have seen it, where it's like... It takes like... One of them had the Phantom Menace, and it's like... You know, it's like there's talk in the background of people saying, well, I rolled up this character and this character. And they, I don't know, one of those things. Hey, I'm going to try to dodge it with this laser sword thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If one of the listeners knows what I'm talking about, email me, because I'm completely drawing a blank here. So. And then.
Looks nice, though.
Yeah. And then our final one that we got is HyperCore 2099 Wasteland, a 5th edition apocalyptic RPG. Now, I guess there is a game called HyperCore 2099, and this is the apocalyptic future alternative for that game.
Ooh.
So it's kind of from the artwork and everything, it's a fantasy-ish.
Yeah, game. I can see that. Oh. Yep.
You already earned some serious credit with me by looking at some of the artists who's involved in this. I supported Mists of Akuma a couple years ago. And the artist for this one did a totally different theme for it. So it'd be kind of fun to see what sort of art they come up with.
I don't know if they're going to make it, though.
They got six days to go,
and there's only... Yeah, probably... I would go now.
Yeah.
But I bring it up in case, you know, anyone wants to spend some major money.
Yep.
You know, because, I mean...
Support the hobby.
You know, I mean, I think I've said this before. Unfortunately for me, the Kickstarters are where all the interesting stuff is happening.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, I do not get excited on the next thing that WotC puts out. I really don't. And I almost don't care. And it's like, you know, I know some people are like, oh my God, they're going to do this. Really? Okay, so what? So how is that different than that same thing that they released 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And I mean, they're not the only, D&D's not the only game that does this. They all do that. I mean, it's like, I told someone, it's like, you know, for example, I like Traveler. I like kind of the old little black book edition of Traveler. And it's like, I told someone, I said, well, you know, you could get Mongoose Traveler. Why would I spend money on something I pretty much already own? You know?
Fair enough.
And yep. And that's the thing. It's like, I have a lot of this material. The only compelling reason to spend the money would be to say, I just have to have the latest and greatest thing. I'm going to call it the Apple iPhone syndrome of gaming. You know, it's like people go like, I need an iPhone, I don't know, 7, because, you know, my iPhone 6 just doesn't work. Isn't the latest thing. You know? I never go there. I do not have to have the latest and greatest.
Yeah, I guess my only issue with Kickstarters, of course, is when they don't deliver. Yeah. Is when you put your faith into a new one.
That is a major risk with Kickstarters in general, and I've discussed that many times on the show, and I've actually had people tell me I'm wrong. That, you know, it's like I always tell people, it is a risk. You're funding a product that may or may never see.
Absolutely.
And someone says, no, they're supposed to produce the products that if they finally have funded, they're supposed to give us those products. It's like, it's not a guarantee. And of course, there have been lawsuits, and they're actually, in some states, it's like, there have been lawsuits that they've won. But it's like, yeah, so what? You have judgments against these people. Either they can give you your money back, or they can give you the product, and they probably, in a lot of these cases, when they fail, they have neither.
Yeah, they're pretty much best of intentions, ultimately.
So.
Yeah. I think Kickstarter has changed their terms of agreement too, so that you can't. It's a little more strict now that they can't just. I think this sounds like a good idea. I'll throw it up on Kickstarter and see if anybody bites. And then like, well, I got bored with this. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't know specifically because I haven't done any Kickstarter, but I do know that they changed their terms of service after a couple of high profile ones went south.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many of them that there were a couple of really high profile ones, and in some cases. There was beyond certain people's control, you know.
True. Yep.
I forget which one. Was it a board game or something that happened to? And some other company came and bailed them out to actually produce it.
Yeah, there was the Doom that came to. Oh, I can't remember the Doom that came to Jersey City or something like that. It was a Monopoly kind of ripoff, and the people who were originally supposed to produce it didn't. Another company stepped in and produced it. So,
yeah. So that was that. They got lucky.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I think there's Kickstarters out there even today that, you know. Actually, I'm thinking for some reason I want to say Interface Zero has that problem where there's still like a few products, PDF products that are still outstanding.
Or something. Oh, I've got some that are 3-4 years old that are still outstanding.
Yeah. So. And I'm not saying that I know for a fact that it's Interface Zero, but it seems to me like Interface Zero had a few products that were late by months and months. And like you said, there's Kickstarters that you've obviously been waiting a few years on. So hard to say. All right, why don't we get into the actual topic, which we actually started talking about this at the end of the last episode after we recorded it. And we're like, hey, we should talk about this stuff. And it was generic systems because they've kind of... I like to say that they've kind of fallen in and out of favor over time. Would you guys think that's a decent characterization? God, I can't speak tonight.
Well, I think ultimately gaming goes through lumping and splitting is the best way to describe it. But usually when they do the lumping, it's a totally different system than when they started.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was I've found a GURPS 3rd edition, you know, back in the day. The D20 boom is pretty much the ultimate example of a generic system, even if they'll have to go through it step by step.
Oh, God. That's actually a good point. I forget about the D20 boom and how everyone was trying to make something that was D20.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't fit.
And then when it basically ends up in a crater, then you end up having all sorts of customized, specialized indie games as you try to split off from the essence there.
Yeah. Well, and recently we've had, of course, as we talked earlier, the Fate boom.
Yeah.
So everybody's designing, you know... The Cat Kingdom with the Fate rules, and then you know the Kickstarter we're looking at with the Fate rules. So Fate's the new generic system du jour, as it were, and people are using it for all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. I mean, and all right, what is the first game system that you think you ever played that you would classify as a generic system?
For me, GURPS, easy.
GURPS, got to be GURPS, yeah, because. I grew up in the 90s. I got my first real cut my teeth, something like the first non-D20 system. And I ended up trying to do damn well everything with it. And then I found out where the limits were with GURPS.
Agreed.
I'm going to say, although it wasn't originally, when I played it, it wasn't originally a generic system. I would have to say the Hero system by virtue of Champions.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
You know,
yep.
Because I mean, especially even back then, you know that you had the Hero system. You had like you know Espionage, which became Danger International. You had what the hell was that damn game?
There was Dark Champions. There was
there was Champions
Fantasy or whatever.
Justice Incorporated was one, which was like their pulp fiction style game. You know, I think, you know, and so Fantasy Hero.
Fantasy clearly. Hero, that's right. Yep.
So
question.
Yes.
Jeff, did you play Heroes first or did you play Rolemaster first? Because I know you've mentioned that in the past.
I'm going to say that I played the Hero system first.
Okay, cool.
Because Rolemaster, I don't know if I'd classify it as a generic system, although I guess you could.
I mean, because it was the Space Master.
Because so. with Rolemaster and Space Master, that covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
But there really wasn't a, what I would consider like a modern day setting or even rules version of the rules, so to speak. Although I'm sure you could just use Space Master. And in some ways, Space Master was more genericized than Rolemaster. Because, okay. You know, and some of it, you know, and it was one of those things that, because when you look at Rolemaster, the original Rolemaster, you know, it's like, okay, you had the broadsword, and then you had the axe, and then, you know, they'd had all these weapon tables. Whereas when you got to Space Master, it's like, this is the melee table, you know, and this weapon is, you know, stops here. At the level one, it's a Mark one weapon, it stops here. And they did that with, like, pistols. Like, oh, I have a Mark III laser pistol. Okay, it stops here. And the assault rifle stops at the Mark IV. And then the actual assault laser or whatever is a level 5 laser. And that's where that maxes out on the table. And they have different spots on the table that they would max out on. Yep. So, in some ways, I think that Space Master kind of genericized the system a little more, at least in terms of the combat charts. You know, and it's weird because then, you know, you go back to Rolemaster again. It's like, okay. And they did that a little bit. And that's the funny thing. They did a little bit of that in Rolemaster with the spell charts. You know, because you had, like, you know, the bolts, all the various bolts. It's like, oh, it stops. It's a Mark 1 bolt. It's a Mark 2 bolt. Mark 3 bolt. Mark 4 bolt. Or even martial arts, where they had, like, I think, 4 levels of martial arts.
Interesting. Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting way of breaking it up, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, just the Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3, Mark 4.
It just isn't. Yeah, they all use the same chart. It's just that the maximum die roll that you could get for damage and criticals stopped at a certain point.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, okay. You know, so you use the same chart, which was nice. You know, there was just the bolt chart. And it's like, okay, I know my fire bolt is, or my shock bolt is, you know, it's just a shock bolt 1. So it stops right here in the chart. And no matter what I do against this AT, I can only ever get a 9, you know, B shock critical or, you know, something stupid like that. So, yeah. And so, you know, so yeah, Rolemaster, it was generic, I guess, in terms of, like, it also depends on how you define generic. It's like, is it generic, is in terms of a generic fantasy system? Absolutely. You know, because I don't think there wasn't really a set setting for it. But I mean, even D&D at that point, even today, you can say D&D is a generic fantasy game. Although, you know, when there's so much stuff already in the books that are really kind of specify setting, you're a little hard pressed.
Yeah.
To completely say that.
There's a bit of an exception to that for Rolemaster. I believe the phrase is MERP.
Well, MERP was the exception, but and even MERP, that rulebook's not that thick. I have a copy of it.
Okay.
I mean, in that case, it's funny. They have a single melee chart, you know. And it's just like, you know. So it was a simplified system, and in some ways, that's the way they should have kept it. They should have never gotten more complicated when they got up to like RMSS and stuff, because you're just like, you guys are killing me, you know. And if they kept it simpler, then there's other things that they could have done. You know, some people, you know, but it was at the time we wanted more complicated. I think. During that period of time,
there wasn't as much on the market, so more, whatever that content might be, was really kind of the.
Well, you know, especially with Rolemaster, it's like at that time period, D&D was like, oh, this is D&D, it's always the same. Where all of a sudden now you have Rolemaster, and it's like this is different. You know, I have skills. You know, D&D didn't have skills back then. You True. Know, I have, you know, how many hit points is not a basis of my level, but how many body development ranks I actually have. That was different.
Interesting.
You know, because it's like every body development rank that you had, that you had a, you got a hit die roll, basically, from that. And that determined how many hits you had. So, and then it really didn't matter how many hits you had anyway, because you weren't going to die from hit loss. You were going to die from the criticals.
I suppose, yeah.
You know. So.
Well, I mean, also BRP, or basic role playing, the fundamental for the original RuneQuest, Call of Cthulhu and Stormbringer. I'm
ElfQuest.
Not sure. Did ElfQuest use the BRP?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember. I used to have that, but I don't think I do right now.
Yeah, you know, like I mean, all those kind of use that, and so Superworld used it.
Superworld, yep, correct.
Although
yep.
you know, they added superpowers somehow. I don't know, I'm sure how they did that. So but I mean, you're right. So
Prince
that, I mean,
Valiant didn't though.
No, that was a different rule set completely.
Yep. It was kind of, that's kind of an odd, it was an odd choice, but yeah, they it was a completely different system for that one.
Well, I'm sure it was just the nature of who developed it.
True. So I remember playing BRP back in the early 80s, and it was Call of Cthulhu, obviously. I didn't play a lot of it, but I know that they put out a system document, I want to say sometime in the early 2000s. And there is actually like a soft cover book for it that you can purchase too.
Well, I do like the mechanism they use for skill training, where if you fail it, you're more likely to get better at it.
True.
And I do like some of the elements of it. But what little I've played of both Call of Cthulhu and RuneQuest, the one thing I noticed is how fragile your characters are.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was intentional.
Yeah, well, obviously for Call of Cthulhu, you're not going to, you know, build a big damn hero. But RuneQuest is often joked as, what was it, Limp Quest? Or nice. Just the sheer amount of damage your characters went through.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the thing I liked about RuneQuest initially was it's like, you know, it had a partial armor system that no other system had, because armor absorbs damage, not prevents you from being hit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and the magic was always a little weak, in my opinion, too. That was the other one that was a little confusing, because it's like, depending on what edition you have, like I have the Avalon Hill edition of RuneQuest. Okay. So you had low magic, divine magic, and sorcery.
Right.
No matter which one you used, they all had issues.
Well, and then I think that kind of cuts to the real problem, or the real kind of issue with generic systems, is that each generic system produces a very distinct flavor, so that it's not truly generic. It's generic to an extent. You know, to produce the same type of campaign in GURPS that you would with a D20 generic system,
you could.
It just doesn't translate.
Well, I mean, and I think that goes to my complaint when I see multi-system source books.
Yes.
You know, it's like, okay, it's like, okay, I look at it from like, oh, okay, in D&D, this guy is a druid, but in another system, there are no druids. Or let's just say they're both some sort of wizards. Well, in one setting, the wizards have these spells, and this other setting, they have these spells, and they're not the same. So how are they actually the same character? And I know that people say, well, that's just nitpicking. And well, true, but, you know, you look at just even like magic items and what kind of magic items there are. You know, the magic items are different because of the way the spells work in one system versus another, or the way magic works in one system versus another.
Yep.
So,
well, it depends on what's abstracted out from the system and what's left as a crunchy detail of the system. You know, D&D has its kind of abstracted armor and combat. GURPS is a much more focused and detailed combat. And they produce distinctly different feels for the games. And so, you know, when you try to convert between those, or if you have a wizard in one system where, you know, every spell is a fire and forget, and the next one is a point-based, like, I can keep firing this magic missile as long as I get these points. you know, I drink a potion, I get more points, I keep going. That's an entirely different feel and will change how combats and even encounters run.
Right.
If your wizard can keep casting Featherfall on everybody and they all just kind of float down the cliff instead of having to make successive dex checks just to get down a cliff.
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of the thing with, like, you take a wizard from D&D and then you make some sort of wizard in, say, Fantasy Hero. Those are two very different characters.
Yes.
You know, and if you try to, even if the setting is sort of the same, they're not the same.
Yeah, and you can even fall back on a generic system for the essence or the feel of a game for the most part. Because, like you said, the rules, you can't fall back on the poetry because there really isn't any. Because it's basically, here's the rules, we're trying to make it as generic as possible. But we're not trying to emulate anything. Like, D&D, for all its faults, just based Dungeons & Dragons, you know what you're trying to emulate. A resource management system where you're basically dungeon hacking. But if somebody did the... as soon as you have that as your filter, you have a hammer and everything looks like a nail. So if you did, like, Judge Dredd D20, which there is one, I just found that out.
That seems weird.
You could see it has the same mechanisms and so forth. So you almost have to sit down with a pencil and paper and decide what sort of feel do you want. If you want to be more of a, let's just say you're more of an investigative type of story, Gumshoe might be more suitable than, say, Dungeons & Dragons, for obvious reasons.
Yep.
Or if you're trying to feel like, have an old school cyberpunk feel, you might prefer Fudge or the Interlock system.
Well, because actually Interlock had a version of Cyberpunk at one point, if memory serves me.
Yep.
Didn't they? There was Fusion. Is that part of the Interlock system?
I think it is, yeah. I think it's
one of the... I get confused. I know that, you know, Cyberpunk 2020 is one of those strange games that I liked, except for the fact that it all got too much about the cyber and not enough about the story. I don't think there were really that many adventures ever for it.
Well, it worked as a Badooski off to try to build some of this stuff, but you can definitely tell it's a product of its time.
Oh, I know. It's funny reading the... what the hell is it? It's like the Cyberpunk Hacker's Guide or something like that. Or some guy's guide to the net or something like that, and it's funny to read.
Well,
It's like, okay. You know, and it's like... Well, just Cyberpunk in general. It's like, you know... They always assume that we would be working in virtual reality, and the truth is that we're not even close to being there. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get me wrong. Oh yeah, VR is starting to make a sort of comeback with the whole Oculus Rift stuff. But even then, that's not quite the same.
Well, no, and going back to our early part of our discussion, you talked about Space Master. Could you emulate Cyberpunk with Space Master?
Actually, there was a version of Cyberpunk, or what the hell was it? Was it Cyberspace? Cyberpunk? What the hell? There was actually a Cyberpunk version of Space Master.
Oh, was there? Interesting.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see how that would work. Especially, you know, if you're going for that, the actual punk feel, as it were, the kind of gritty down and dirty.
I think you probably could do it, although, again, I think that game... I think it was just called Cyberspace.
Okay.
I think that's what it was called.
But yeah, I wonder, you know, how that...
Cyberspace.
How that translates.
That's what it was called. Mm-hmm. I owned it. It was okay. I think, again, it got a lot of baggage from Space Master.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It still wasn't horrid. I think there were some interesting tidbits in there, because it's really strange how certain parts of it, like any of these cyberpunk games, there's always like those weird parts that people just make like random, like, this would never happen, and you're like, that did happen, and that's scary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, like in the... I want to say in Cyberspace, one of the things that's... Or was that a different... I think... I don't know if it had to be Cyberspace, because I don't think I have any other cyberpunk-type games. It's like, they mentioned Madonna as, like, still some sort of force in popular culture in cyber, you know, in the cyberspace game, and I'm just like, you know, just as a, like a, some sort of fashion designer or something along those lines, and it's like, well, that's funny that she's still around and she, you know,
yeah,
still doing yeah. stuff.
Well, you're like, think about it. In our society, we had Tupac do a show despite being dead for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's not that far a stretch that you could basically do the same thing, especially when we start working on stuff like voice recognition and combining algorithms and stuff.
Right.
Well, you might have to have your own contract where you have your restrictions when you're dead. Otherwise, it will be exploited.
You know, they have concerts in Japan with entirely hologram-generated band members. It's I forget the name of it, but yeah, it's kind of odd to see.
Now, you know, so in terms of a generic system, yeah, I guess Rollmaster kind of fits that category. I mean, obviously, like you guys have been mentioning GURPS, which, you know, you guys both. I looked at GURPS, and I think for me, when I looked at GURPS, I saw some of it. I could see like the Hero influence on GURPS, and I'm like, well, why don't I just play the Hero system?
Yep.
You know.
Well, again, GURPS and Heroes are both darn good systems, but they scratch different itches.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, especially from my point of view, it's like, you know, I was a give me my calculator, let me crunch the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. But the big thing about both systems, and these ones are unique in comparison to other generic systems, your GM has to sit down and make sure everything is hammered out before you start. Because they're a point-based system, both of these, they're really easy to break.
True.
You know, I could build a character that's basically designed specifically to break your game if I actually just crunch the points. I have no limitations.
I would argue that's true, actually, even for the looser systems like Fate. I tried to run a low supernatural historic-based game for Fate, and I found that making stuff up on the fly was not as easy as I'd hoped it would be. And I think with a generic system, you just have that front-end GM backbreaking work of, hey, since I chose a generic system for this system, this campaign, this setting, I'm going to need to do all the heavy lifting beforehand, or at least some heavy lifting beforehand before I can even start, so that my players don't walk in here and, you know, the first time they, you know, they walk down Main Street, they start punching through buildings and stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's not quite a generic system, but it's close enough for our purposes here. I'm involved in a game that's based on the Cartoon Action Hour system. And one of the things we decided as a group is we needed to fulfill archetypes, because the last game we played, which was, oddly enough, Fate, we could tell certain characters were more important than others just because of what we picked and what was being used. Hmm. So we built all our characters based on the five-man band archetype. And we took up the leader. So I was playing the Lancer. Another buddy of mine was playing the Brick, the Smart Guy, the questionable villain, who's now a hero, and the girl. And we all ended up having all sorts of crazy adventures in space. Because of it, we all roughly our niche. Oh yeah, we just did our, you know, speaking of the space, you know, ninjas from last week, we actually ran the Christmas Space Ninjas special on our Twitch channel at RPG Glory. It was awesome. Yeah, I won't go into too many details here, but if anybody wants the link, you can contact me. But yeah, no, that's kind of the idea here. Like, decide your parameters before you start and decide what you're doing with it. Like, even though you might not have a system, if you pull out your comic books and say, I want to do this, then you'll have a better understanding of what the limitations you want in the game.
True.
Ultimately.
And it'll depend on if you pull out your Batman comic books or your Superman comic books.
Precisely.
They're entirely different types of games.
Yeah. And so, it's kind of the same feeling I have when you try to throw everything in the kitchen sink. There's only about a handful of systems that kind of work with it. You almost have to control the power gauge. Like, if I said you're going to have a game that's like magic versus technology, that could mean any number of things.
That could mean Rifts.
Yeah, that's actually the one I was thinking of there.
That's the one I was thinking of too. Yeah.
Wow, fools really do think alike.
Absolutely. They spread it across all through, how many of their different game systems do they have? Four or five?
Yeah.
And it kind of works, but
personality-wise, Rifts works amazing. Rule-wise, it's kind of terrifying. If anything, That almost acts as a great transition over to the newest version of Rift, which is done in the Savage World engine.
Yeah, and from what I understand,
it runs way better than that. Like, I've ordered the books. I haven't really looked at them too hard. And it'd be fun to see how a difference, because if there was ever a system that needed its own universal rulebook, it's Palladium.
It's play totally 100%, 101% agree on that.
Yeah.
Well, because it cleaned up all the base rules, and then you wouldn't have to keep repeating in other books.
Well, and then
it would be easier to extrapolate.
Yeah. Well, and the Palladium system itself is kind of weird as it is, because it's, in some ways, it's kind of an offshoot of D&D, but no matter what anyone else says.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And yet, it's not.
Well, the problem is they tried to combine a couple of really cool concepts together and threw it in a stew without coming up with a basic spine before they started.
I've always referred to it as a Frankenstein system. It's made from a bunch of parts and then kind of bolted together, albeit rather poorly. Yeah. So we have percentage systems here. We have D20 systems here. We have a skill system that changes your original character creation, so you have to keep going back. Yeah. You have, you know, you have MDC versus SDC. It's, you know, it works if you, you know, if you beat the crap out of it, it, you know, and make it your own system, it works. But as written, it's almost untenable.
Well, again, if you got one guy playing an Elder Dragon, you know, a hatchling, and you got another guy playing a rogue scholar, and that's just from the main book.
Yep.
One of them's going to have a lot of fun and one of them isn't. Especially if you end up having other systems there.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, I'll get off my soapbox a little bit here, just on that, because this is a topic I could rant about for hours.
Well, I think we all could rant for hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we also have I think I played Fusion a couple times, but I never ran it, so I never really got my arms around that as a system. I think I have the Usagi Yojimbo role-playing game, which I think is based on Fusion. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody... Have you guys played Fusion at all?
Yes, I played a couple of games of Cyberpunk 2020, which is basically most of my experience. The engine itself's okay. Like, I like it. But I was playing in a party where they really liked their lethal combats. Where if you got, you know, the Saturday Night Special rules. So, as a result, you spend most of the game trying to stay the hell out of... You know, making sure you always had a drop on an opponent. And got the hell out of dodge before they could fire back. Because if you got shot, unless you had some pretty heavy-duty cybernetics or bionics built into you, you were dead.
Hmm.
You know, it made a lot of GURPS campaigns I've been involved in being positively fluffy in comparison.
Yikes.
Yeah. And again, that is actually an unfair interpretation, because I'm sure if we played it with the standard rules, it could probably give us a better interpretation. Or if we use something like one of my favorite, I got a friend of mine who absolutely swears by a fusion game called Dream Park,
where they used to have that.
Yeah. Well, the concept is they're basically, you're playing VR, but it's based on either a fantasy game or a superhero game or what have you. And they basically build it there. He swore that that was the single best universal system he'd ever seen. I don't know about that, but I wouldn't mind giving it a shot just to see what it's like.
I'm sure there are copies still floating around out there. Maybe even on PDF and drive-through RPG. So,
yeah. Now,
but,
yeah. And then, of course, we'd be remiss if we mentioned it already, which was Savage Worlds for Rifts. But,
right.
And it's like, it's weird. I like Savage Worlds. However, that said, I'm not sure if I'd really almost call it generic.
Well, it's specifically designed for a two-fisted, very specific type of gameplay.
Right, and I mean,
does really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's very cinematic, I think. Yeah, and its approach. So there are certain things that make sense, and there are other times that it's just like this is. I don't think it quite makes as much sense, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first question you have to ask before you use Savage Worlds is: are you trying to emulate an action movie? If the answer is no, then don't use this system.
Right.
Because ultimately, you're going to be disappointed if you try to do a drama in the bloody game.
You know, which luckily most people are a little more happier to have a little more action style movie than not.
Yeah. Okay. So does Savage Worlds scale pretty well, like from low level peons all the way up to superpowered characters, or does it kind of sit in the middle and kind of occupy that middle space of heroic characters a la D20?
I'm going to say kind of, sort of.
Yes, but no.
Yes, yes, but no. And the only reason I say that is because of the way the system works, the higher level characters will, because they're kind of quasi-is level, they have advancements, and there's different ranks. And the higher level characters just have more feats. Or, I mean, they're not feats, they're edges, but I'll call them feats for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes the dynamic enough that, you know, if you have, let's just take an example. Let's say you're a high enough character, you have, I forget which one it is. Because there's an edge that allows you to draw two action cards and use the highest. And then there's an improved version that allows you to draw three action cards and use the highest for your initiative.
Interesting.
So, you know, if you think about it, that's a game changer. And it's like, it trusts, you know, sometimes I've played some NPCs that have had the improved, I'm going to call it, for lack of a better word, improved initiative without actually pulling out the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's level-headed. That's what it is. It's level-headed. It allows you to draw two cards, and improve level-headed. It allows you to draw three and use the best of those three. And then there's actually a lower level one that's quick, and it's like if you draw an action card and it's under five, you draw again. So if you combine that with the other two, you're likely to end up with a pretty good card paired, you know, initiative-wise. And that, you know, initiative is, especially in Rifts, not Rifts, especially in Savage Worlds, tends to be a lot of everything. Because, you know, he who shoots first wins.
I can see that.
Fair enough.
And I only say that because that's typically the way. So people who get to act first tend to do a little better than those that don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, I don't think, like, none of the powers are super, super powerful, I don't think, and that's by nature. You know, I mean, you have, you know, there are some attack spells, and, you know, you can get hurt and stuff, but it's not quite the same as, like, D&D, where it's like, oh, here's 10d6, boom, you know, I just took out a whole squad of orcs.
Yeah.
So, I think in that aspect, it probably scales a lot better than D&D. I'm at least, like, early D&D, it's like always, to me, like, right around the 5th to 7th level is the perfect sweet spot. Outside of that, not so much. Because, you know, you're at the lower levels, you're too weak to do much of anything, and at the higher levels, you know, most things, even the higher power stuff, just gets to be too easy.
Yeah, I usually consider 10 levels plus to be the aha levels, because you're basically not really playing your characters anymore. You're basically playing a meta game against the GM's crazy ideas. Well, where your response is, aha, I did this. Aha, I had a counter. Aha, I knew you were going to do that.
Well, you know, here's the thing in D&D. If you look back historically, once players hit 9th, 10th level, it was assumed that they would be doing different types of adventures, a lot more what I'm going to call geopolitical.
Yep.
Yeah.
And nobody really wanted to do that. They wanted to do more, hey, I want to go ahead and fight more stuff. So, I mean, why do we have all these monster books? I look at some of these monsters and I'm like, really? Why do I care? You know, I mean, it's almost easier just to, I don't know. I mean, even still, it's like with D&D, or even like Pathfinder, I forget to use half the feats that creatures have because it's like I just don't remember them. As a DM, it's like you almost cannot remember every single feat and what they do. It's impossible.
Yeah. Well, running monsters in I ran Pathfinder for better part of a year, became like running each monster became like running a character on its own.
Oh, it is.
Especially after the first level, after about CR1 or 2, it's, well, this monster can do this, 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 and this.
I mean, that's one of the nice things about, you know, Savage Worlds, where it's like, you know, it also avoids the hit problem because, you know, player wild cards, you know, take three hits and then they're out, whereas everyone else just takes one hit and they're out. So, you know,
Yep.
There's not that, what I like to call, you know, that hit point race, you know.
Yep.
Because that's the thing that always annoyed me about, like, okay, this thing, I mean, and Rollmaster had the same problem. You have some high-level things that have 200-300 hits, and you're just like, okay, this is going to take a while.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why there's actually a customizable version of the third edition rules, which is known as E8, where they assume you only go up to 8th level, but after that point, any experience you gain is for special abilities or feats. But the base spine of your character doesn't change. In order to help compensate that sucker. So, again, the D20 actually did a lot of really cool stuff, besides the essentially the models that they did for basic dungeon hacking. They did Mutants and Masterminds.
Yep.
They did a BSM D20.
They did Spycraft.
They did Spycraft, which is
oh amazing. My god! I like the idea of Spycraft, but the execution of Spycraft sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and it just gets complicated. And the funny thing is that the version I have was their attempt to simplify their original edition of Spycraft. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay. And I remember I got Spycraft because I wanted to run a spy game, and I looked at Spycraft versus, like, I think D20 Modern. And I remember looking at D20 Modern and it was like, well, this is the smart hero or the strong hero. I'm like, those descriptions mean nothing to me. Whereas, you know, you go to Spycraft, it's like, oh, here's a soldier, here's, you know.
Well, I think they were trying to be larger for Modern D20. Like, Modern D20, of many things, was trying to be a more generic system than traditional D&D.
Right.
And the problem is they got stuck on the ultimate form of multiclassing I think I've ever seen in a game, where you're building, you take the base attribute for your character, then you take a advanced class, and if you really want, you can take a prestige class, and yet you're still playing with all these different moving parts. Like, and they also hadn't decided on something I decided a long time ago when I looked at them. They have these concepts called talents where you get special powers, but what they didn't figure out was what's the difference between a feat and a power. And I thought that a power, you know, a talent should be more powerful than a feat because it's used to represent a special ability, like spellcasting or evasion. But then I was going through Future D20, and you could take feats to get powers, which seemed kind of counterintuitive, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's the generic system thing, is that there probably are some places that some generic systems just shouldn't go. I know that there was a superhero supplement for GURPS. Now, if you can, I think it was the Black Ops book, I think you built 900 point GURPS characters.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Think about that for a second.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
And that's assuming you don't take the, there used to be two 400 point powers that if you took, you didn't have to really worry about combat anymore. And it's been a while. I think there's some sort of invulnerability built in there. Okay. And once you get to that point, you're basically either dominating the game or you're not breaking it there. Which gets back to the original problem. Like, oddly enough, one of my favorite supers environments, fluff-wise, comes from GURPS. It's GURPS IST, International Super Teams.
Interesting.
Where you're playing UN-backed metahumans and being sent to some of the more dangerous places on the planet because the UN had a monopoly on fusion power. And they also helped develop other techniques in order to give... They actually were a little closer to a one-world government than a lot of the conspiracies that we have nowadays. But it was for all the right reasons, to help keep, you know, countries in line. Rogue nations and so forth. And they also had, around the UN thing, the listing of the fallen. And they had three different alien invasions that happened, where the aliens ended up on our planet in the first place, building a truly diverse environment. Now, if you tried to play it with GURPS, the actual rules, it breaks.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of broke my heart, because they had such really neat concepts that they threw in there. Like, I'd love to see a remake of IST with a better system. It'd be a Savage IST.
Well, or a Hero System IST.
That would be awesome.
All right, gentlemen. I think we... We're kind of, actually, I don't want to run this episode too late, so okay. Any closing thoughts on generic systems? Should, I mean, I don't know. Do they have a place in gaming?
They do. I think there's just, you know, as a GM, you just got to be prepared before you start to say, I'm going to use a generic system, therefore, I'm going to be doing a lot of the heavy work here.
I mean, I'm going to actually go a step further. How about a different question? Do you think any system technically could be considered a generic system?
I'm going to fall back on Ken and Rob, of course, because, you know, they're obviously the elder statements of our gaming hobby. Any system can be used for anything. The question is, how much time do you want to put it into there? And how much you're going to have to house rule in order to compensate?
And how you want it to feel.
Yeah.
You could run MERPs with, Hero System, I'm sure. But that would be a lot of work.
Yeah. And again, don't put in more effort than you have to, because your players are probably not going to care anyway.
Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Exactly. So what I usually recommend, before you use a generic system, write a single line of what you want to do with it. Just a single sentence. Then ask your players what they want to do with it, the idea. Then when you have that idea, then you know what systems you're already familiar with, because maybe your players won't want to play GURPS because they've never played it before. Or maybe they're Champions fans because they always played superheroes.
Right.
And yep, that will definitely help as a bridging action for trying to help develop between setting up a new game, because if you're going to be building a generic system, you're going to need the feedback of your players to help fill in the dangly parts.
Yep.
The gray areas, because otherwise you're doing all the work yourself and you're going to end up with GM burnout within a month and a half.
Yep.
Especially if you build a unique system. Now, on the other hand, if you decide to use Star Wars and you're just using it on a basic mold, everybody's on the same page because you know what Star Wars is for the most part. And that makes it easier to convert it over. And it also limits what you want to do with it. Like, Star Wars D6 system was amazing to the point where it's actually influenced the culture of Star Wars as we know it. Like, a lot of what comes out of Star Wars Rebels came from the original D6 system. But when you tried to put it in D20, it didn't quite work as well.
Yep.
You know, and I've seen books of GURPS, Star Wars, and it works, but only with the right group.
Yeah.
And I think that could be said of any generic system with a setting. If, depending on what you're doing, it only works with the right group.
You know, yep, like Savage Star Wars might actually work quite nicely because that's what it's designed for.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you probably could. Alrighty. With that, I'm going to go with let's close up that topic and ask the listeners if there's anything you actually want to say about, obviously, the any input or comments you have on the generic system. You can go ahead and send us that via email at info@rpgcircus.com. Go to the Facebook page or the home page and go ahead and use the little SpeakPipe application, which says send voicemail, because we haven't had any audio comments in a while, and I love them. So, yes, yeah, send me an audio comment. I don't care what it is. And then, of course, you know, if you want to send me an email about sending you some stickers, I still have a few floating around here. So just send me a topic when you send me the email. That way I know it's from you. Anything else outside of everyone have good holidays and we'll see you next year? Because it'll probably be at least, I hate to say it, it'll probably be about a month before we get back to recording episodes.
That's to be expected. I guess season greetings to our audience, and we want to hear your stories about your own use of generic systems.
Yeah, you know, because it is one of those things. Like I said, it's like, you know, obviously if we missed one, I'm sure we did. But, you know, I mean, I think we've all used, I think in some ways we've all probably used a generic system, although sometimes we didn't know it was quite generic.
Yeah.
Or generic. The system itself was a little generic because, you know, obviously like we were saying with basic role-playing, there's Rolemaster, there's Call of Cthulhu, and, you know, some people would say, well, they use the same rule system, but they're not really generic. So, depends on how you define generic.
But there is something that you've actually made me kind of curious about.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really curious to see if there's actually a basic role-playing game that almost has a cyberpunk feel to it. Because it feels like it actually would kind of match in a lot of ways. Because the characters would be fairly fragile, you'd have the skill system, And I think it'd be easy to grok to a point where it'd actually be kind of usable based on the mechanics, but it'd be built on a totally different system. The only thing I'd have to see is if there's some sort of firearms rules of some sort within the game itself.
Well, basic role-playing, I mean, Call of Cthulhu has firearm rules, so be pretty similar.
That solves the problem right there. They just basically create some basic things for... Just build a very generic version of Cyber Things and see where it goes. I don't know. Just food for thought.
All right. Any other closing comments?
Nope. Happy holidays, everyone.
Yep.
Yeah, happy holidays, indeed.
Yeah. So we will see you guys in, well, next year.
2017.
See you next year.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.